The following is Marty Gukeisen and Megan Schwartz's talk, Giving the Right Amount of Shits, Combating Burnout, from the 2015 Information Architecture Summit.
Hi. All right. I can hear me, so I guess you guys can. So back in the day, young, eager Megan was like, hey, we should totally submit proposals and maybe talk at the IA Summit. And I was like, that's cool. I'm so glad you're really energetic. Let's totally do that. And we started brainstorming. And then I was sitting down to try to like flesh out some of the ideas we talked about. And I got really like feeling really posery. how am I going to like wax on about some methodology when really what I was dealing with at that point was a project that had a crazy timeline and the goals were changing all the time and I was having some interpersonal issues with someone I was working with. And it was just, I was so super stressed out. And I was like, you know what, I feel like what I've actually been learning lately and focusing on is learning to give the right amount of shits. Because I'd gone through the whole spectrum of caring a ton and then being really stressed when things were too crazy and you can't fit it all in, to then going to the full other end of the spectrum and being totally like, whatever, I don't even care, whatever you want, I'll do, fine, everything's fine. Like not actually filtering anything or putting in my expertise anymore. And then actually getting really sad about that and being like, you know what, I don't feel good about that and that's not how I want to operate. And coming back to, I need to find some balance and be able to put in what I can, but then also be able to let go when I can't have that much control.
I was kind of feeling the same way. It was kind of the perfect timing in some ways, because I had a client who was particularly difficult and didn't really want us to provide any recommendations. She really just wanted us to be puppets and do exactly what she wanted, you know, to be done, and really wasn't valuing us as an agency. And so we got to a point where we kind of let it all go and just said, whatever you want, lady, we'll do it. And that also felt pretty terrible, especially because with those types of clients, a lot of times when shit hits the fan, they blame you anyway.
Yeah.
So we really couldn't let go, and we had to come up with a way to work with her so that we could actually build something she would be happy with.
Yeah. So here's our quick overview of everything we're about to talk about. So basically, we're going to go through how burnout happens, how do you focus on being happy and understanding how happiness affects how you're doing in the workplace. We'll do some fun worksheets where we assess your happiness and what's impacting that, talk about frustration and those factors, and then really get into some more tactical. What are you actually dealing with? How do you filter that down? How do you cope with those moments when you're about to lose it or just dealing with kind of a general state of burnout? And how do you reset when you do get that all the way to the apathy side?
So we're going to start off talking a little bit about the process of burning out and how this kind of happens. Okay, so it starts. You join an organization, and at the beginning, it's honeymoon phase, right? We've all been there. You're super excited. We're going to make awesome things, and they're hopefully equally excited to have you, and the expectations are super high. And then something shifts. Shifts, as Marty likes to say, shift happens.
The flight attendant used that.
that's right. We copied that from the flight attendant, I forgot. So, you know, it definitely seems like at some point we go from being super, super excited to I don't care anymore and you all suck and I hate everybody here. But the expectations in the organization, they still expect awesome things, and it almost starts to become like, it feels like a demand now. It was like, we're all excited and now it's, do this now, and you don't want to. So why does that happen? Well, as we all know, we have a very strong desire to belong. So this is just after our physiological needs and our need to feel safe. And self-esteem is a sort of measuring stick. It's kind of our barometer for how well we are actually achieving this goal of belonging. So thinking of it in that way, the higher your self-esteem, the more you feel like you're actually belonging and you are fitting into some kind of larger system. And workplace effectiveness is kind of a really great way for us to build our self-esteem. We're kind of part of this larger system, and we can kind of become more ingrained and kind of feel like we're contributing to the sort of greater goal with all these great people that we hopefully, you know, respect and think are equally smart. Basically, what I'm saying here is that we're kind of, it's in our nature to give too many shits. And it's really easy at some point to say, I'm not going to care anymore. I'm just not going to care. And you're never, ever going to be able to do that. To some degree, you are always going to care, even if it's, as Marty said, caring that you no longer care. Yeah. There's always some level, there's some degree of caring. So let's define burnout. Burnout is a syndrome of emotional exhaustion. So we're not talking here about physical exhaustion. We're talking about the emotional part, where you just feel drained. And it causes a decrease of engagement in the workplace. So specifically today, we are talking about burnout in the workplace. But obviously, there's some things going on in your personal lives that may affect that, that we'll also talk about. And typically, as we said, this is happening because you're not being fulfilled in some way. This can lead to supernova moments. This is when you lose your shit on somebody, just completely lose it. Apathy. This is, obviously you no longer care, let it all go, whatever you want. I'm a UX puppet. Isolation, disconnecting from your peers, and depression, if it gets really bad, it can kind of start to affect every part of your life. And there's two types of burnout that we're going to address today. One is when you're just not satisfied and you're just unhappy. And two is you're mad as hell, just pissed off. And we'll talk about ways that you can address those issues. So Marty's going to start us off with happiness.
Yay. Yay. Happy. Okay, first off, being happy matters. Being happy at work matters. You're going to spend more than half of your adult awake time in your workplace. So don't get into the mindset where it's like, work sucks, but that's okay. I just work my 9 to 5 for the rest of the time. It's a lot of time that you've decided you're okay with sucking. So don't do that. Care about enjoying your day. The good news is you probably don't need a new job. If we can get some ideas in our head around how do we actually cope and learn how to give the right amount of shits, then we can focus and move forward and be happier at work. There are some specific triggers when you're in the workplace. This is from a 2014 study by the Society of Human Resource Management, and this was all the things that were rated very important to people having high job satisfaction. First, there's a few baseline things that I'm not going to talk a lot about, but just acknowledge really quickly that these matter, but they're also things that you kind of establish early on, and then you move forward, and hopefully they don't change, or things stay good, or you might occasionally kind of reassess. But what I'm going to focus on are things that are more involved with your day-to-day. How is it affecting what's happening? So those are things like, are you getting a chance to really use your abilities? How are your relationships at work? Do you enjoy the things you actually spend your time doing? So we're going to go through these in a little bit more detail in a minute, but these are some of the factors we want to think about to actually just assess and know whether or not these are contributing to the bigger picture of your workplace happiness. So when you're happier, you're better in like every way. We tend to think kind of backwards about this, where you do some things and you do well and then you feel happy about that. But actually, if you focus on being happy, it makes you more productive, more creative, more resilient, more intelligent, you can adapt better, and in all ways, less susceptible to getting to that point of burnout. So it's worth taking the time to focus on your own happiness. In fact, so much so that knowing how smart you are and how much you know about what you do is only 25% of what actually contributes to your job success. In fact, 3/4 of it are things like optimism, social support, and whether you can see stress as a challenge instead of something that is a threat to you. So it's all about what's happening in here versus, well, I guess it's all happening in here. Your knowledge is here. It's all there. But it's all about outlook. And when it comes to the bigger picture of your long-term happiness, knowing everything about your circumstance is only about 10% of what contributes to that. And knowing how you interpret the world and what are your perspectives and how do you deal with things is 90% of what predicts your long-term happiness. So addressing how you deal with things is very important. We think it's our circumstances. We put our happiness on our circumstances a lot, and it's just not very true. I do not think that word means what you think it means. We commonly do this sentence that's like, I will be happy once, and fill in the blank of what it is we think we're working towards. And we're just slogging through and hating life, but that's okay because we're going to get to that thing and then we have got happiness and we just will have reached that oasis and then we just get to spend the rest of our lives happy because we filled in that blank. Turns out that is not how it works at all. So if you get a bigger house and you thought that's exactly what your family needed to be in a better spot and just be totally happy, you will be a little happier for a little while. and then you will go back to being just as happy as you were before. The basic formula for happiness is when your experience exceeds your expectation, then you're happy. When what you experience is not as good as what you were expecting, then you're unhappy. Which seems like, aha, I've got this. I'm just gonna set my expectations really low. And then it's cool, happy, happiness achieved. Here's the catch. It's subject to hedonic adaptation. Yeah, fancy, fancy words. Which really just means that over time, you adjust, and whatever was really exciting, or actually even whatever was really bad, it goes to both sides of the coin. Over time, you get used to that, you adjust to the new norm, and you go back to being however happy you were before. You don't get to just hit a bump, and you've reached your goalpost, and now you're happy. That goalpost keeps moving because you get used to where you've ended up. And at first, that's a little depressing to me. You're like, oh God, I got there, but it keeps going, and I have to keep trying, and I never get to reach the oasis of happiness. But it's a good thing, because we don't all live in a cave. If that first guy had been like, it sucks being in the rain, and then he wandered into some cave and was like, sweet, now I'm dry, and he was just like, I have attained happiness. And like from ever after that, he was just like, cave is frickin' brilliant, super happy about this cave thing. We would just still be hanging out there like, way to go, buddy, we're really happy with the cave. But because we want to be happy, and because there is this hedonic adaptation where we start to get used to what the new norm is, it drives this push to make life better. So eventually a guy in the cave is like, this is great, but I wish it was warm and I wish I could see, and that's all I need. And then he'll make it warm and he can see, and then he'll want something else. These are sheets, bed sheets that I had as a child, and they point out what happiness really is. So we've talked a lot about what it's not. But what it really is made up of moments. It's episodic. And so if you want to improve your happiness, you have to embrace the fact that happiness comes in bumps. That's how it works. So some of the things on the sheet are things like, happiness is a warm blanket and a thumb. Happiness is a smooth sidewalk, says Snoopy on his skateboard. Happiness is feeling your toes in the grass. So it's about like appreciating those little moments that make up life and filling your life with moments that you get to appreciate. Once you recognize that it's not this long-term thing, that once you've reached that blank that you had set up for yourself as an oasis that will mean happiness, once you let go of that and realize that you need to incorporate and build happiness into your day regularly, you can have a much better strategy for maintaining a high level of happiness. All right, now we're gonna talk about some strategies. So just following up on that immediately, now that we know we need to maintain happiness with lots of little bumps, the first thing you can do is actually just keep a scorecard of things that help make you feel happy, and then make a point of incorporating that into your life. Basically, actually pay attention to your own user needs, not just the user needs you think about in a work context for a project, but actually what your own user needs are. So there's a cute worksheet. Yeah, everybody has worksheets, or there's someone on a chair somewhere near you, and we're gonna make you do like stuff and then talk about it, and I'm gonna like make people talk about things. It's basically in three little sections. The first is like, all right, just generally thinking about anything in the world, just list off some things that make you feel happy. The second one is more honing into, all right, but some things don't really make sense in a work context. How do you sort of think about and pre-plan some things that can actually make you feel happier while you're in that work context? And the last one is more about being able to change your frame of mind in a moment. So things that you don't actually need to go do an activity, but just can you even think about something or do something in an instant that helps you change your mindset and be a little bit happier.
So I think we're gonna give you a few minutes to do this.
Yeah, play. Now play, talk amongst yourselves, get happy.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy.
No
place to lay your head. Somebody came and took your bed. Don't worry, be happy. The landlord say your rent is late. He may have to litigate. Don't worry, be happy.
Look at me, I'm happy.
Okay, I'm gonna start accosting people and asking you to share just like one happiness thing that you put down on your list, particularly workplace happiness examples and the theme of us all helping to learn from each other. We'll start it off a little bit. Hug a puppy, that's a great life thing to do to feel happier. And if you can get your work to get a puppy, that is like, it makes everyone instantly happier, and it would be a good investment for them. So bring that back to the office. Have a happy place when you're in the office, sort of even in the context of your office. Have a place that's like, okay, I like going out and just walking outside the office, but have a way to get away. Maybe it's the break room, maybe it's farther away than the break room, but having a little bit of an away space even when you're at the office. Oh, and one thing I do to try to insert some happiness into my day, I ride a bike. That is how I get to work and how I get home from work. So every day for like, I live close, so like 15 minutes, I get to have a little breather, some time that I know I will get to enjoy to start off and to close it up. Now I'm going to just start accosting people. So people want to start volunteering, so I don't have to accost people who are unhappy with that, because I will. Okay. You?
So nailing an insight gives me an instant burst of happiness.
Okay, sweet. Nailing an insight. Just getting that moment, you're like, I just rocked this. So cool.
Whiteboarding.
Yay. That is a really, really good point. I mean, just you get to be physical and be doing something and you feel like you're 10. I don't know. It's nice.
Use different colors.
Yeah, colors are good. Oh, sweet. Coworkers. That could be huge. Enjoying and having some happiness in your day. Awesome. Having a productive day. So feeling like, sweet, I was actually on task. You know, when I have a day like that, I'm totally happy about it.
Really good or bad puns.
Sweet. The stock is perfect for you. And clearly that is an interest we share. Oh, sweet. We need to expand. We have a not as extreme example, but that is really good.
Helping somebody.
Nice. Helping somebody. That is excellent. That almost instantly lifts your mood. That is a really good point.
Foosball.
Foosball. Oh, yeah, sweet. Sweet. You get to be the master of everything in foosball. That's very good. Any more? Anybody else? Okay, you first.
Moments of shared understanding.
Okay, nice. When you feel that moment where you're on the same page and you're like, ah, you know, very good.
I was going to say having a boss who supports and mentors me.
Great. So having a boss that actually supports and mentors you, having a really strong relationship there, perfect. That's awesome. Okay, all right. The rest of you will just have to be happy on your own. Next up, a couple more strategies around being happy. The next one has to do with adjusting what your norm level is. So we talked about that it's really these bumps, and that's when you are at your happiest, and when you embrace that, you can have more happy moments. But you can also do things to sort of tick the marker a little bit of what the baseline level is. So rather than having that be totally neutral, like, hey, I'm not happy, but I'm not sad, or even a little bit negative, actually ticking the mark so it's I'm good. I'm good right now. We naturally focus on things that need attention. And again, looking back at the larger context of evolution, this was really important back in the day because you had to be worried about something that might eat you or eating something so that you wouldn't die. Those were very important things. So you had to pay a lot of attention to those things that were stressful to you. Now, we don't have to. We have a little bit more time and a little bit less likelihood of getting eaten. And so what really actually makes you happy is to focus on things that are already going right in your life. So not the stresses, the things that are like, oh, this actually, I could make a whole list of things and I'm super glad are the way they are. So you can retrain your brain to actually notice those things and spend more of its effort focusing on those things. Here are three really concrete things you can do to impact your overall outlook and do a better job of processing the world around you in a way that makes you enjoy the world. First, start your day with kindness. Specifically, making sure that the first message you put out into the world, first text message or email, is positive. You might have to send a bunch of stressy work emails throughout the day, but make sure that the first thing you send is, hey, I really appreciated what you did yesterday, good job, or thanks, it was really nice to have lunch, whatever, something positive before you get into all the rest of it. The next one is writing down every day three things that you were grateful for. And this just trains your brain to sort of scan your life and scan what you're thinking about and think about the things that are positive. So every day you add three more things to the list. And this is quick. You just jot it down. And they can be really small things. This doesn't have to be the be-all, end-all. And the last one, journaling, not about what's going wrong. Usually diary sort of thing is more about whatever's crazy and sad or your unrequited love or whatever. But making a point of journaling about a positive experience that you've had in the day. Because even on your worst day, there's probably at least a moment that something went right. And what's nice about all of these things is, one, they don't take a lot of time, and two, you can be depressed and still do these things that help train you to think happier. You can fake it till you make it. It actually, studies have shown, smiling makes you happier. So even knowing that what you're doing is smiling to make yourself feel happier will still make you feel happier by the end of the day. So remember that and try to incorporate pausing to think positively and faking it till you make it. And Megan hates the creepy smile so much. She's uncomfortable. We can move on. It's making her uncomfortable. And the last point is a quick one, but a really important one. We are not in more in control of ourselves than a two-year-old is. We need to get a good amount of sleep. We need to eat healthy food. And we need to be able to run around, get some fresh air, get some exercise. And if you're in pain or you're way too cold or way too hot, like, address those things. Basically, if two-year-old you would be crying, fix it. Don't just power through. You're not a Zen master. You need to actually address your physical self. And that allows you to be happy much more than we want to recognize. Okay, so coming back to these points that we brought up earlier, these things that are really important to having a high level of satisfaction at your job, it's worksheet time again. This is my favorite worksheet because it has little shits all over it. We're going to look at each of these. I'll kind of walk through them a little bit. And then assess kind of how you think that's going for you right now in your current context. And then also kind of maybe make some examples, particularly if there's anything that you think needs some attention. And then kind of rate how much you actually care about that. So these are sort of the across the board things that tend to impact it. But some of these probably matter more to you and your personality than others. So you can start walking through these and talking about them and doing whatever you want to do. I'm just going to go down the list a little bit. Using your abilities, are you doing what you're good at, what you were trained to do? Work relationships has a lot of pieces. So that's who are you working with day to day? What is that relationship like? How is your relationship with your immediate supervisor? How do you feel that you can relate to upper management? Is there some sort of conduit there? Do you get to enjoy your peers? If you have sort of a mentor or mentee set up, how is that relationship? Enjoy what you do. So this is not like the overall concept of, do you enjoy being an IA? This is, what are you actually spending your day doing? What are those tasks that make up the hours that are your workday? And do you enjoy doing those things? So what percent of your time are you happy with what activity you're doing? There's so much room for activities. Autonomy is about you being in the captain's chair. And this can come into play in a lot of different ways. It might mean that you have a high degree of control over your schedule. It might mean that you get to take ownership of the kinds of projects you're involved in. It might mean that you are able to really be the decision maker on some things and be the person in charge. So thinking about kind of those different aspects, are you getting a level of autonomy that you feel comfortable with? Company culture. Meaningfulness can come in a couple of different ways. It can be because you feel like what you do is really important to the overall job that's being done where you are. It can also be around how good you feel about what that is in general. Do you feel like you're making the world a better place in some way? So you can think about it in those two different ways. Do you think your cog is important to that machine, and are you making the world better? And skill development, do you have resources and opportunities? And variety. That could be working with different people, switching up what projects you're on. There could be other factors too, other ways that you get variety, but are you comfortable with that level? So I'll pick on you a little bit, and this one, I just would like to get a sense, as you're going through and assessing, try to identify of the things that maybe could use a little more attention, and you care a lot about them, just getting a sense of what are kind of the top things that this sort of helps you realize you would like to make better in your life. Anybody want to volunteer? You don't even have to tell the backstory or like why you hate your coworkers or whatever, it's cool. Yell them out. Go ahead. Awesome. Keep yelling. People yell. All right. More. Yell at me. More yelling.
Work relationship.
Great. No one's raising their hand. I'm just pointing, and then someone over there should yell. Perfect. Okay, great. All right. That's good. Trying to accost you a comfortable amount. And next?
All right, so now we're going to talk about the part that sucks. So we talked about the happiness and assessing what makes you happy and how to sort of figure out, you know, and prioritize that list. Now we're going to talk about what pisses you off. So there's three sources of frustration that we're going to talk about. You work with people, you work in a place, and you work with yourself. So working with people can really, really suck. People can be really combative and not agree with the thing you say. They don't trust you, and they want to just disagree with everything you say just because you said it. No positive feedback. Go straight for the jugular. Tell me everything that sucks about what I did. Competitive. Maybe they try to knock you down. Maybe they steal your ideas. Overly siloed. They go off, and they do their little thing, and then they show you their work, and you had nothing to do with it at all. Working in a place can really suck. And even if you are freelance or independent, you still work within a structure. There's still access to resources. Oftentimes you're working with a client that works in a structure, so you're still bounded a bit by that. Work overload. Way too much on your plate. No way you can get it all done. No control, no autonomy. As we talked about before, that is incredibly important for happiness. Management pressure. Expectations are insane and you can't possibly meet them. Insufficient reward systems. Maybe you don't feel like you're getting paid enough. Maybe the benefits aren't there. Maybe you're just not getting that pat on the back every once in a while. Unestablished company culture. So if you had no idea how to rate your company culture because you just have no idea what that is, that can be incredibly frustrating, not knowing what those expectations are. And working with yourself can suck. We can be too anxious. We can be unassertive or overly assertive. Sometimes we ask for what we want way too much, and sometimes we don't ask for it enough. Insecure, constantly needing validation. Eager to please, if you can't handle it when somebody is mad at you or unhappy with your work. Too motivated at work. This one's blurry. What does too motivated mean? But if you feel like you're sacrificing things that you like in order to make your achievements at work more prioritized, you might be too motivated. And all of these are necessary evils, right? We can't avoid these things. We can't avoid work. We can't avoid working with people in a place. And we certainly can't avoid working with ourselves. So what do we do? Can we avoid the shit, though? It turns out we kind of can avoid the shit. So we identify all the things that piss us off, and then we identify out of all those things the things that we can't change. And then, magically, much like this woman releasing the birds, we let them go, and everything gets better.
Goodbye.
Yeah. No. It does not work that way, as we all know. So glad some of you get the joke. I wasn't sure if everybody was going to get it. Okay.
Anyway. So many levels.
We can't just let it go. As we talked about before, we care too much, so just let it go. And it's not that easy. And it's also the principle. For a lot of us, it's just the fact that we feel like when these things happen, it's like they're happening to spite us. So when the guy, you know, in front of us in a car cuts us off, it's like they're doing that to me because I'm me and they're trying to make me angry. We know that that's not true somewhere in us. We know, but that's not how we react. Our initial thought is just, everybody's trying to hurt me. But turns out, as we know, everyone is dealing with shit. Everybody has something going on. As you can see in this room, everybody's here for a reason. Everybody has some thing that they're dealing with that they're bringing into the context that you're in, the situation that you're in. So it's not about you. So the first thing that we have to do in order to let go of the shit is stop looking for who to blame. That's the first thing we want to do. That person's doing this to me. My manager is doing it. Whatever, it's the who. Or ourselves. Most of the time, I'd say we're more hard on ourselves than anybody else. We have to start looking for what is to blame. It's the context. And we are all very familiar with this word, context. But it's so much easier to apply it in our jobs, in our actual work, than it is in our work context, in our situations. So what is happening that is making this person or this situation so terrible? So, an example of this, of why context is so important. They really help us to adjust our expectations. So if you're looking at this picture and you're thinking, why did this water turn brown? And I can't help but feel like it's kind of a bad example given the title of this talk. You would probably not want to drink the water given the context that we've given. But if you knew a little bit more about why this water turned brown, you would know that it's actually not water at all. It's bourbon. It's been sitting in a barrel for however many years, and it's turning brown because it's taking on the oak. And then, hopefully, probably most of you would be like, yeah, I'll take some bourbon. I would absolutely like that brown water. So it's about adjusting your expectations so that you can appreciate things for what they are, given what happened before you were even part of the picture. And there's a little bit of a trick with context. The devil is actually in the details. It's super easy to want to compare situations across contexts. So I'm in this situation before, and it's very similar to what I'm doing now, so therefore things should probably be about the same as they were in that past context. But it's very difficult to have accurate expectations based on your past experiences. One of the things with bourbon, a lot of you will know, is that bourbon can taste very differently depending on the oak that it sat in, where it was stored in the warehouse, the years that it was aging. There's lots of variations, and so you can't have the same expectation every time you take a sip of a new type of bourbon. It's going to be quite different. So we really have to think about that in terms of our work life too. Stop trying to have exactly the same expectation every time you're in a similar situation. Okay, so we talked about understanding the shit. Now let's talk about how do we identify our own shit. So what is your barrel? Let's think about the context that we're all dealing with. So this is actually your narrowing down the shit's worksheet. So if everybody could get that out. We're gonna ask ourselves the following questions. Is it more than one person? What do these people have in common, if so? And if not, then what is it with that one person that's causing you an issue? And what are they doing that is so damn annoying? Is it more than one project? Is it just one bad project, or is it something that's going a bit beyond that? And again, what is the common thread across these projects that's giving you trouble? Is it more than one task? Is it just one task that's causing you stress? Or do you feel like it's kind of the combination of a bunch of things that you're trying to get done at once? So what are these tasks and why are they giving you trouble? And then finally, we can't ignore that there are some things going on in our lives outside of work that are impacting our ability to potentially handle normal amounts of stress. So what does that look like? So we're gonna give you a few minutes to go ahead and think about this, and I have to caveat this with, if your shit is sitting next to you, maybe leave names off of it.
Code words.
Code words are good. And we won't be asking you to share this publicly. This is just for you, so feel free to be honest with yourself.
No accosting.
The song ended, so I guess it's time to come back. Okay. So what among your problems can you actually change? All right, we're going to give you a hint. You can control your behavior. You can't control anyone else's behavior. So it's very simple, very easy. You can control yourself. You can't control anyone else. You can influence them. You can alter your behavior in order to impact how they behave. But you're not a puppet master, and you never will be. And nobody can control anybody. I mean, we can't even control our children or dogs. There's no control. We can't do it.
No control.
We can influence. So with that in mind, this is the shit funnel. It's adapted actually from the shopper funnel. So essentially, what this is saying is that all the shit goes into the funnel, right? All your problems are going into the funnel. Of the shit, there is a certain number of things that you can control. So again, this is the behavior that you can alter in order to, you know, kind of address your own problems. And that gets filtered out of the funnel. Next, it's the shit that you care about. So again, going back to what you just did with Marty about figuring out, what do I really care? What makes me happy? This is that. This is the stuff that you really want to prioritize and focus your energy on. And then of that stuff, there's only so much you can do. There's only so many things that you can really care about. You only have so much time and energy. You funnel out the shits that you give. So that's the final piece. That's where you actually give yourself permission to really focus on, I'm going to worry, stress, fix these things. And hopefully you don't worry and stress, but we're human, so that's gonna happen. But you're giving yourself permission to only look at this little thing, this one thing that I care about and that I can control. And you're giving yourself permission to let go of all of the rest. So we're gonna do that. We're gonna go through this and go ahead and get your worksheet out.
Grab your funnels.
I kind of put some guiding questions here to help you. So you don't have to fill out the top part because you kind of already did that with the narrowing down the shits worksheet. We're really classy here with our titles on worksheets. Next, what are the things that I can do to change the way I handle this shit? So write down, is there something that I can actually change in my behavior to address this? And then of those things, write down, what are the things that I really care about? What are the things that I want to develop in terms of my career that's going to make me feel fulfilled and happy? And then under that, what are you actually going to spend your time on? What are you actually going to work on and give your time and energy, essentially give a shit about? So go ahead and go through that. I'll give you a few minutes. Again, you guys should feel absolutely free to speak to a neighbor if you feel like it's more helpful for you to talk through these things, or go ahead and do it individually, whatever makes sense for you.
Shoot the shit, keep your shit to yourself, whatever works for you.
This is a story about control. My control. Control of what I say, control of what I do.
You don't give a shit? Just dance.
And this time I'm gonna do it my way. I hope you enjoy this as much as I do. Are we ready? I am. Cause it's all about control. And I've got lots of it. do what's right for me. And me wants to be, is that okay?
Nice.
Okay. Does anybody else want to talk about what they narrowed it down to?
I kind of ended up narrowing it down to like solutions to the stuff that's really super bugging me. So what it came down to was like delegating tasks I really do myself, being present with whoever I could, and setting boundaries for like my work hours.
Nice. Okay. Cool. Good.
One more over here.
Yeah. Can't live on that. Yeah.
Don't. Can't even feed children.
How ironic.
Improving communication instead of just responding to someone's passive aggressive email, actually just don't talk to them.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, great. Well, hopefully that was helpful. And again, you know, these things don't necessarily have to be written down, although I do think it is helpful to keep a journal and sort of document these things as they're happening. But if it's something that you can just get into the habit of doing and thinking about regularly, it's just going to make it a lot easier for you to sort of focus in on those things that you really want to focus your energy and give your time to, rather than seeing it all kind of jumbling and mixing up in your head and just feeling that kind of overarching sense of unhappiness. Okay.
And now, now you can just let it go. So everything that didn't make it down to the bottom of the funnel, it's probably still going to bother you. It's still going to be like irritating. But when it starts to irritate you, you can mentally be like, all right, I know this is a thing I don't like, but I have decided I'm not going to put in my time and energy trying to fix that. I'm going to focus on the things I can, and I've already decided what those are. So it gives you permission to push those aside. Don't lose your shit. Okay. So now it's the supernova. Ah. This is all about when you're really getting to that moment that you are about to lose your shit. How do you bring it back down? One way to help with that is to pause for realignment. So when you're starting to engage with someone and it's going from discussion to discussion, that's more of an argument, like, pause to make sure that you're even on the same page. You can spend a lot of time circling around and feeling like they don't see what you're saying and they're not making any sense, only to eventually realize that you had different things in mind as far as constraints. They know about a shift in constraints that you don't know about it, or they were prioritizing something in a different way than you were, so they were thinking about it in a whole separate way. So pause to just briefly go through, all right, what is our main objective here? What constraints are we thinking about, and how do we want to prioritize? Along the same lines of that, when you're starting to feel combative with someone, pause to mentally go through and try to see their side of things. This is really practicing active empathy. Think about what is their intention? What is their overall goal? Are they trying to make things awesome? They're not really probably trying to piss you off, so think about what they actually are trying to do. What are they being protective of? So, you know, we're trying to protect the user experience and think about things from that sort of a lens. But they might have a whole different perspective that may be pulling at what they're thinking about. And then stop to actually verbalize those things. Talk about what you are aligned on. Hey, I think it's great that we both care so much that we're really invested in this and we both want this to turn out really awesome. That's awesome. and I see that you're seeing it from a perspective that's really thinking about timeline and budget, and that's what you're most concerned about. I'm looking at it through a lens of how do we make the best possible product or whatever those are, but like actually pause to acknowledge the importance of all the perspectives at the table. When you're going through those things, just a few like do's and don'ts of trying to persuade someone or talk to someone or going through that, make sure that you're staying calm as much as possible, relying on facts and data. Ask questions, especially when the answers will sort of help to make the point that you want to make, and really pause to listen. This seems really obvious, but also is really hard to do in practice. When you're starting to get worked up, you tend to just start thinking about the next thing you're going to say, and you just use their time talking to formulate your thoughts for the next thing you're about to like throw at them. And so when you catch yourself getting worked up and starting to do that, don't let yourself really pause, be thoughtful, and respond to what they actually said. And be willing to concede points. When they do make a totally valid point, don't gloss over that. Acknowledge that, because you're helping with the back and forth of what's going on. Remember to take it home that your overall goal is the context of advocating for the user. And respect those project tensions that come from the fact that having those other perspectives are healthy and actually make a better end product. The fact that a designer is thinking about the emotional intention and how's that going to make somebody feel, and that an engineer, it wants to make sure the load times are going to be reasonable and that this is very doable, and that a project manager wants to make sure everything gets done on time, that an account manager is trying to make sure the client's happy. Like the fact that somebody is in charge of thinking about all of those things specifically is great, because it's going to end up with a better product overall. So respect that some tension is going to happen because of that, but it's for the greater good. And look for where there's those win-wins. Don't get personal or let them get personal. Just go past it if that happens. If they start going down some weird rabbit hole that's really off topic, call it out as like, hey, let's talk about that later. I want us to get through this thing that we're supposed to be talking about. If you're making a point and you have a few points you can make, don't water down your argument by bringing up some things that are sort of half-assed that kind of make sense and kind of don't. Like, if you have 2.5 points, don't even make the half point. Just make your 2 good points. Don't be provoking them. Don't exaggerate their point to like extremes. That just makes people angry. And if they do that to you, ignore it or try to pull it back. Another concept is to treat life as comedy, because it is. And particularly when you're trying to brainstorm or think about how to solve a problem, it's really helpful to embrace bad ideas. It can be very tempting to just start shooting things down and pointing out the problems with why that won't work. But particularly in these kinds of contexts, it's much more productive to actually roll with it. So if you are involved in improv comedy, there's not a whole lot of rules, but one of the rules is that you don't get to negate what somebody else starts doing. You have to roll with it and continue and build upon it. So if we're doing improv up here and Megan's like, oh, that chair is on fire, I don't get to be like, oh, Megan, you were mistaken. The chair is not on fire. Like, I have just broken all of the rules of improv. What I can do is be like, oh, good thing I brought this bucket. Or I should just dump my water on it. That would have been better improv. So you just keep building and figure out how to go from there. And you can, yes, try to guide it to be the sort of improv sketch that you wanted to do, but not at the expense of letting her do whatever she brought to the table. So even when you know something is a bad idea, when you, the immediate thing in your mind is like, no, that won't work because X, Y, Z, try to reframe and be like, okay, if that was going to have to be, how would I add to that? What would I put on top of that to actually make that work? And go from there, and even if you don't end up landing on whatever they threw out, it might help you get to a better place in the end, because it makes you think about new ideas, and maybe a workaround for how to make that work actually helps solve another piece of the problem. All right, so you tried some stuff, it's not working, and you are at the precipice. This shit is about to explode. Supernova style. This is just about coming down from that moment without actually having done that. Try to meditate through that urge. So meditation has to do with observing yourself, like you are a little tiny person of yourself inside yourself. It's not about just like closing your eyes and removing all thought from your head. It's about pausing and reflecting on what's happening and being very observant of all of that. So when it's building, pause and be that little inside self that starts to do things like you're narrating the situation to your own self. You're like, my face is getting very warm. It's probably red now. I feel that my breathing has gotten very rapid. I feel that my muscles are quite tense, and it's probably visible that I'm being very tense. And, oh, the thought has just floated through my mind that I would like to wring their neck. That's very violent and probably not appropriate, and I recognize that I'm taking this very personally, and I think that she hurt my feelings when they said this thing, and I don't think that they're respecting X, Y, or Z. So pause to, like, dictate to yourself what's happening, and not with like, no, I shouldn't have thought that, that's not right, but just like pause and observe and tell yourself what is happening, and then start to pull it in and take control. When you start getting worked up to the point that there's a physical reaction, you're starting to get into that like fight or flight mode that has been initiated in your body. And you can control that by actually controlling your breathing, slowing your breath on purpose, and kind of pulling yourself back away from that. And then lastly, just respect that even if you're breathing slower, it's not the right time to talk anymore. Like, you've gone beyond, so you just need to pull away. Say, all right, that's great, let's take five, or let me have some more time to think on that and I will get back to you. But do something to not continue to engage in that moment. Just let there be a pull away where you get a little bit of space. I need this thing. And once this has happened a few times and you start to have this pattern, start to just learn yourself. Learn what are your triggers. If there's some project that's causing you trouble and you know this one person sets you off, you probably can't just avoid working with them, but start to recognize like, okay, I'm gonna make sure and have some extra happy moments before I go have a meeting with this person. I'm going to try to recognize that I start to now get initially defensive just because we have some bad blood already, and try to purposely go beyond that and try to compensate for that and being overly positive or overly embracing their ideas so that you can address those things.
Okay, so talked about how to avoid the shit, but as we all know, there's no way we're going to completely avoid the shit. It happens, and here are some tips for handling it. Okay, so the shit is definitely in there. It's not going to be completely gone. We can narrow it down and focus on some things, but there's other things that are going to be happening. So here's what we can do. The first thing I think is probably the most important thing that you can do for yourself is guilt-free breaks. Stop wasting time Facebooking. We all do it. I can't tell you how many times I walk through, and everybody at some point in the day has Facebook up. And in a way, we think, like, I need this, like, mental break. I need to just get away from what I'm thinking about because the idea hasn't come to me, and I need to think about something else. But it's actually hurting you because then you feel like you can't actually take a guilt-free, real break. Go for a long lunch. Take a walk. Save them up and, you know, save them for a time when you can actually remove yourself away from your desk and do something that is actually making you happy, like drinking a cup of coffee on the patio, or just taking a walk around the parking lot, or just shooting the shit with one of your friends. One of the things that we do at Enlighten, that is one of my favorite things that we do, is what we call 3 o'clock push-ups. So at 3 o'clock every day in our area, we do push-ups all together. And we're not gonna make you do push-ups because they're really hard, and most of us just end up in a plank and we just sit there, and then we maybe end up like just laying on the floor and we don't finish them, but
except for Tracy, she is amazing.
We have one yoga master person who like counts, and there's like she does 30, and I think most of us do like 5, and then we all just lay there.
Yeah.
So what we are going to make you do though is squats. So everybody stand up.
Let's get physical.
So this gets you moving, it gets your adrenaline up, and you're doing it all together, so you don't have to feel guilty at all because everybody's doing it.
Yeah, and feel free to adjust. If you got really psyched about the push-ups and you want to do push-ups, great.
Push-ups, yeah.
I'm going to play with lunges, but just do something that moves your body around.
If you can, do squats. You don't have to go all the way down, by the way. Squats can just be, I'm bouncing. I'm a bouncer. Okay, are we ready? We're going to do 15. Let's go. Ready?
Don't step off the stage.
Okay, let's go. One, two, three. 12. 13. 14. 15. Okay, and then after we do this, we all just kind of stretch. Most of us are already on the floor by this point, so we're laying down, just kind of moving our bodies. And then we kind of all just shoot the shit and talk about our days. What's going on with you? Headphones are off and finally kind of interacting, kind of a bonding moment slash move, get your blood flowing moment. So
it's a great
highly
way,
recommend.
It's a great way to recharge a little bit that's not sugar or caffeine. And you just, it's surprising, like, it's just like taking a nap or something. It really does help you to pause and recharge a little bit. So
yeah.
Do it, make everyone around you start doing it. They'll be like, oh, this is ridiculous, and then they'll love it.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I definitely, when I first started at Enlighten a year ago, was kind of like,
what's
and
happening?
Now it's like, okay, great, 3 o'clock push-ups. There's always somebody out there to remind us, oh, guys, it's 3:02. We got to do this. So it's become kind of a really awesome thing. Okay. So I heard a lot of you guys talk about boundary setting, and here's the thing about boundary setting. It sounds really awesome. Just say no, I'm just gonna say no. Except that you have to accept that along with this, you are definitely going to make some people angry with you. So this goes back to that kind of personality trait of being too eager to please and not being able to let people just be angry with you. If you have a boundary, that means that you are creating a stopper where somebody once had freedom. They no longer have that freedom. So they are definitely not going to be happy with that. People like freedom. So you have to just accept that they're going to be angry with you. And then count on that hedonic adaptation to rely on them eventually kind of getting used to the fact that this has changed. Hedonic adaptation works both ways, right? Mm-hmm. We adapt to shitty situations and we adapt to happy situations. We kind of come back to the middle. So people will adapt. You just have to get through, kind of weather that first initial scary, like, oh God, they're mad at me. They'll get over it. Work smarter, not harder. When we're really, really busy, the first thing that we want to do is do exactly the same thing, but just more of it, right? We're putting our energy on, I have to do all these things that I always do, and I'm just going to do it more.
And stop
Actually,
sleeping.
Really, you should be putting your energy into finding efficiencies. A few that I have found in my job. Cutting out a detailed funk spec if the tech team is co-located or if it's just a really simple little page or project, you don't necessarily always need a functional specification that's going to detail out every single piece of the functionality. So we've cut that out on some of my projects. Be a meeting skipper. I'm a meeting skipper. I love skipping meetings. If I can skip it, I won't go.
Like a confession.
It's a confession, but I'm also kind of proud of it. I honestly think that there are way too many meetings in most organizations. And skipping the meeting, it's not necessarily always disrespectful if you're just kind of invited because, oh, they think that you should be there. And a lot of times I've talked to project managers and said, you know, I do appreciate you in putting me on the invite list so that I know that it's happening and I can come if I have time, but I probably won't come unless I somehow, you know, can fit it into my day. And then that can be really, really useful. Or potentially even call in. Even if you're sitting at your desk, just dial in so that you can still do your work. Wearing headphones, the ones that come over your head, not in meetings, by the way, I felt like I should not. Don't do it in meetings, at your desk. It's sort of a signal that you're working and not available for chatting.
Yeah, not the little ones, the, like the big ones that announce to the world, don't talk to me, busy.
Yeah. Okay, if you're somebody who says work is work, personal life is personal life, you're wrong. It's not a good way to think. Go to work with the idea that these people are awesome and that they could be your new best friends. Having friends at work is incredibly valuable, not just because it's easier to work with people who know you on a more personal level, but also because it just makes your life better. You have camaraderie, you can, you know, kind of vent some of the issues that you're having. These things become more available. Also, in your supernova moments, when you get really, really pissed off and you have that embarrassing, oh my God, I just totally like lost my shit, it's really a lot easier to apologize to somebody who you like.
And when you're clashing with someone in general over a particular point, when you know that outside of the context of that conversation, you like them as a person, it makes it a little easier to parse through those moments where you still are like gritting your teeth at them, but you can push forward.
Yep, yep. So give yourself permission to make friends at work. So if any of you have ever read The Art of Asking by Amanda Palmer, or if you haven't, I highly recommend it. It's such an excellent book. But one of the main points that she makes that I really took away was that by asking for help, you can't do it alone, right? We all need help in various times. And instead of seeing that as a weakness and a failing, the way that Amanda Palmer asks you to look at it is as a way that you are empowering the other person to help you. So you're actually giving them an opportunity to help you, and that's empowering them. And it's sort of a mutual empowerment that you're kind of asking for help because you need it, and they have now that opportunity to give you help. So don't feel like you can't ask for help. Definitely make sure that that is something you have sort of gotten over and get comfortable doing that. Remember that you have nothing to prove. So I can't tell you how many times I've been in a situation where I've worked on something for weeks, and I have all of these ideas kind of in this nice little wireframe package, and I've got it all figured out, and then I get to a meeting, and this developer who just popped in to take a look has this like brilliant idea that solves all of our problems. And it's frustrating because you think, oh, like, why didn't I think of that? I've been thinking about this for so long. But honestly, you know, there's different perspectives. People have different, you know, projects that they worked on before that might be, you know, kind of applicable. You're still awesome. You still have great ideas. You had a lot of great ideas. That's why this thing exists. So, you know, just give yourself sort of a little bit of a break and don't feel like it's such a big deal when somebody else has a better idea than you, especially if they're outside of the UX profession, because then sometimes we feel a little intimidated by that.
You loosen the jar.
You loosen the jar. Okay, stop complaining. So we talked a little bit about, you know, making friends, you can have venting sessions, and this is good, but venting is very different than complaining. Complaining gets long-winded. Complaining, you kind of go on, and it starts embedding and validating those feelings more and more in you, and a lot of times we ramp ourselves up when we complain. Venting, you get it out the door, and then it's gone, and you stop. So just remember to keep it brief. Stay positive. Don't let your burnout turn you into a different person. Marty gave the recommendation of even if you have to fake it. Your attitude actually does have the power to change your organizations and the organizational culture. So just a quick, I stole this from a talk that I gave last year. This is sort of what makes up your organizational culture. And the thing I want you to look at and see is attitudes is on there. Attitudes is a huge part of your organizational culture, and it feeds into the larger chain. And of course, depending on how large your organization is, your attitude may impact a lot or it may impact a little, but it's still going to be impactful. So try to, you know, keep a positive attitude and kind of keep the sort of persona that you want other people to have around you.
Yay. I was real excited about figuring out how to embed a GIF because that's how tech savvy I am. But I did it. Just own yourself, like own who you are and start to get comfortable with that. Recognize what your strengths are and accentuate them. Let that be the thing that stands out, that people remember about you. And actually own your weaknesses too. We don't have to become the perfect textbook IA or whatever your role is. Like, just own what you're gonna be good at and rock it. And the things that you're not gonna be good at, just find workarounds. Respect that that's not something that at this point in life you necessarily need to master. Just, okay, then I can be late. So Megan just warns me that I need to plan to be here like a half hour before this thing is starting and things like that. So I just find workarounds to make your weaknesses work with your situation and just own what's great about you.
Okay, so if you're past the point of handling the shit and you're in burnout mode, you don't care. Everything sucks. We want to talk a little bit about some strategies for hitting the reset button. So it's that moment when you realize it's time that I just start over. And we're not talking about switching jobs. So one of the things that I have found most useful is going back to the basics. The first thing I always think of is talking to my users. They're the ones that matter. At the end of the day, all of the organizational stuff gets in kind of the way of that. That's what I am here to do. So talk to your users and gorilla the shit. Honestly, it might be worth your time to go out and do it yourself if you're not getting funding for research. Read new UX books or reread the classics. This can be a great way to just kind of get back into like, okay, wait, What is this whole thing all about again? I need to sort of remind myself of that. And I think probably the most invigorating thing that you can do is attend conferences. So you're already there, good job.
Way to go, guys.
Time for a new challenge. Implement a new design or research technique. So just kind of start thinking about ways that you can switch it up and change what you're doing on a daily basis. Probably learn something here that you can do at the IA Summit, hopefully. Try a new deliverable. Are you sick of wireframes? Sometimes just doing the same thing over and over again, and if that's sort of the mode you're in, can get really, really like just old. Try a different tool, maybe just sketch. Honestly, I think that it's kind of a misnomer that we always need to have hi-fi wireframes. Maybe it's just a page, and you can just sketch it and annotate that and call it a day.
Yeah, and don't wait around for, you know, we talked about all these factors that can impact your happiness, and some of them seem more obviously things that you can change versus things that are harder to impact, but don't wait around. Don't just decide, like, well, that company culture sucks, that's it, I'm done, that sucks, and I'm sad about that. But, like, really decide that you're going to have some ownership of things that you want to affect, and do what it takes to push that forward. You know, ask for things that you want, create proposals if that's what it takes, or just start doing those things like a new deliverable, any of it. And make a point of being able to stretch outside of your comfort zone, maybe doing something you don't normally do as a way to help reset and have a new framing on the world. So maybe it's delving a little bit into some content strategy when that's really not a piece of what you typically always do. Like, make a point of trying to take on something a little bit different if you have the context where you can ask to do that to make that shit happen.
Okay, so get a life. I'm not actually talking about your personal life here. I really hope you guys all have awesome personal lives.
Right.
But there's something that your job gives you that your personal life doesn't, right? So there's something that you're getting, some goal that is being achieved. Maybe it's because you like to create. Maybe it's that you like to analyze things or write reports or whatever. Maybe just being part of a group collaborating. Don't let your job be the only way that that gets satisfied. Do something outside of work that also satisfies that need. Start a hobby, whatever, join a group, do something. Just don't let that be, you wouldn't put all your stock into a relationship, like, okay, so now you're my, you know, partner, you're gonna provide everything I need. Like, that's not how it works. Feel that way about your job as well. Talk shop, schedule regular check-ins with your UX colleagues at your job. We don't actually, Marty and I never work together,
ever.
So we schedule regular check-ins to make sure that we feel like, you know, everything's going okay, and just talking shop, you know, making sure that we're both kind of on the same page. Join a meetup in your area. If you can't find one, start one. That's what I did.
She did it.
The Ann Arbor UX Happy Hour.
It's amazing. Come join us.
Yeah, if you ever are in Ann Arbor, take a look at our page and definitely come join us. You know, it's kind of helped to create this nice little community. It's been sort of one of those things that's helped to create this community in Ann Arbor for UX professionals. So join one or just start one. And finally, this is kind of the problem we all want to have. If you feel like you've made it and you're like super successful and things are going great, a lot of times that can mean that you're being pulled away from the thing that you want to do. Whether it means that you're put into a management position, or maybe you're writing too much or talking a lot at conferences, or whatever that thing is, don't let it pull you away from the thing that you really love to do the most. Okay, no more shits to give. I've done it all. Thank you so much for trying, Megan and Marty, but nope, no go. Done with everything.
It can happen. We can't assess all your individual situations on a slide, but something to keep in mind is, you know, this little worksheet we had you do, if you went down this list and you're actually quite unhappy with a lot of these things, and you feel like you've been in that same situation for a long period of time, like close to a year or more than a year, you're starting to probably get to a point where that's really not okay, that you just can't maintain that level of dissatisfaction for that long and have it not just be affecting your life in general. So you have to use your own barometer, and maybe this helps you reset and you try some things and see if it makes a difference, but don't put up with things eternally. I don't know. Just be ready to make the call that, like, all right, I want to move on. I need to find a new positive space and be able to reset in a bigger way and actually change jobs.
Yeah, so if you feel like nothing is working, it may be time to leave your job, but we kind of want to just put a little bit of a warning on leaving a job. the grass is always greener. It always seems like it's going to be better if I just leave. But in reality, you need to focus on changing yourself and your own behavior and figuring out what those shits are that you need to give and how you can work on those within the environment that you're in. Because
shit is everywhere. Most important part of the talk.
So just a quick rehash of what we talked about.
Make happy a priority. Engineer your own joy. Look for the good. It's not personal. Find the real whys. Have a focus. So don't try to do everything. When you're in an interaction, make sure that you take the time to see their side. Breathe through it. Learn to say no and then to ask for help. And then make a point of rebooting when you stopped caring.
And if you want to read more about how much you should care, these are some of the references that we use to frame our talk. And that's it. So thank you.
Thanks for giving a shit, everybody.
So we'd like to, open the floor. If anybody else has suggestions or thoughts on how they've dealt with burnout, or if you have any questions, of course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we will put these slides somewhere on the SlideShare or something, and then you can have all of these, all of this shit.
This was awesome.
Thanks.
So you talked a lot about dealing with your own shit. Say that you are in the position that you set your company culture up to have them all deal with their own shit, what would you do? Like, do you have any tips on that?
Like, in a management kind of role, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Take it away, Megan.
So I guess I'm just trying to understand the question. So if you are, you're saying that you are in a management position and everybody kind of works individually, or I guess I'm not sure I understand the question.
Just how to like affect the overall culture and help people deal with their own shit in
a
more general sense.
From a top-down standpoint. Got it, yes. So actually, I'm really glad you asked that question because, you know, we had a lot of content to put into this talk, and so we kind of had to think about whether or not we wanted to talk about the bottom-up approach or the top-down approach or even give that a nod. And absolutely, there are tons of top-down ways to impact your organization. And I would say probably that would be the most effective way. So if you have a company culture that is promoting burnout and you feel like people are just burning out all over the place, that's gonna be the most effective way to get people to sort of, so, you know, it might be things like adding more resources so that people are less overwhelmed. It might be things like more company outings or just getting people kind of to, you know, a little bit more informal or feeling a little less like everything is so rigid. So yeah, top down is most definitely the most effective way to deal with a company culture of burnout.
Yeah.
And since, you know, on an individual level, we're usually less in a position to do that, to affect change, that's what we chose to focus on today. But yeah, absolutely, I would say that would be the most effective way.
Yeah, and try to be aware of cultural things that you didn't think you put in place but have become the norm. Things can evolve to where people expect everyone to be putting in 80-hour work weeks, not because from the top down they said you need to put in 80 hours, but because there were a few people who just never quit and people started to feel like they had to be at that same level or else they were just letting that other person take it all on themselves. And so things can evolve in a way that nobody purposely intended to make this craziness. So start to recognize when there's things like that happening and make a point of undoing it, saying it's not okay for this to be the norm. You know, talking to people who are working too many hours about how to make that not happen. That
forced vacations,
mm-hmm.
That can be really, really useful too.
Yes, so picking apart that this is not going to be our culture.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Mm. So that's another tactic that I've seen.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Or have like your senior leadership people make sure that they're not putting in, because they do set the tone for what, you know, what the hours are going to be or what that's going to look like. So, great.
And to add on to that, queuing up your
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's a great suggestion. So making sure that, you know, if you're emailing late at night, that you're not sending it at, you know, 2 a.m, but hold off until it's a time when people will, because people do notice that stuff, for sure. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts or questions? Okay, great. Well, enjoy your tea. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
If you enjoyed this podcast from the 2015 IA Summit, subscribe and check out the full collection at library.iasummit.org and on iTunes. The 2015 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by the UIE All You Can Learn Library. The All You Can Learn Library will give you the skills and techniques you need for a competitive design advantage with 24/7 access to experts and UX topics. For more information, visit aycl.uie.com. That's aycl.uie.com. As always, thanks for listening.